Test one.
Yo, we're hot.
The interim education funding committee will come to order on this, the 15th day of October 2014. I would ask Anita to take the roll call, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators Flackel.
Present.
Anderson.
Present.
Heckerman. Marcellay.
Present.
Pullman.
Present.
Shively.
Here.
Representatives Nathy.
Here.
Dosh.
Here.
Hake.
Yeah.
Hattelstad.
Here.
Hunsker. Kelsch.
Here.
Koppelman.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Monson.
Here.
Rohr.
Here.
Rust.
Here.
Sanford.
Here.
Wall.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum present.
Thank you. And I want to make a special welcome to Representative Margaret Wall, who's joining us today. And I speak for everyone when I say I'm glad you're able to join us. For those of you who haven't had a chance to visit with her, she's a retired post-secondary school administrator with degrees from Valley City State University and Minnesota State University, Moorhead, prior known as Moorhead State University. She's obviously well qualified to serve on the committee, and we welcome and hope you that we hope that you engage in the conversation today, and we all welcome the opportunity to get to know you better. So welcome today. And I think we'll also note that Representative Rust has been appointed to replace Senator John Andrus in the Senate, but that effective date is later on in the year, and so he will continue to be referred to as Representative Rust for at least a little while longer. So enjoy while you can. As part of the process, I will provide some of the big picture information, and then Anita Thomas from Legislative Council will walk you through the major changes in the bill. Some of this you will hear repeatedly, but that's probably okay, because when you go home, you'll be expected to be the people who can kind of pull up the information off the top of your head, and we want to make sure everyone has a pretty comprehensive and thorough understanding of what is in the bill and what's not in the bill. Certainly there's some things that we won't be putting in this bill at this time, and we'll get to those later, because they're not germane to our interim study, which essentially is focusing on what's the base funding and what are the weighting factors. Those are the main charges that we've had based upon the interim study by our consultants. From a process perspective, we'll ask you to limit your questions to Anita to those that clarify or define or definition. And once you're through that, we'll have plenty of time to discuss any thoughts you have on the bill before you. Mr. Jerry Coleman from the Department of Public Instruction will also be joining us today, and he certainly is adept at answering school finance questions. I believe this is a really strong bill going into the session, and recently I was visiting with a colleague who commented, you know, there was years when we were excited that if we had a $25 per student increase, and we've certainly come a long way from that, and we're really in a nice time where we are able to do some very nice things with the strong economy that we have. I want to welcome the school administrators that are here today, but a caution that it's a very, very long process, and probably, you know, mindful that, you know, don't start counting any money that is being set in stone today, so or in the next few days, because there's no guarantee of what may or may not come your way. Remembering back to the 2009 session, I think it was, when we had the big K-12 bill, when we had over 104 amendments that were proposed for that. So sometimes we tweak them slightly as we move forward, and there'll be plenty of time for a lot of long discussion, and there's, again, things that will be added later on. The bill is longer than one would have anticipated, probably because of the sunset provisions that are in there. And that took up quite a number of pages, because essentially after the end of this current biennium we're in, everything that we had in place for this biennium sunsets. And as such, a cause for a bill that had more pages in it than normal you would think of in terms of what we're doing. Now into the bill. Some of the main things of the bill. According to Mr. Jerry Coleman from the Department of Public Instruction, there is more than $2 billion in the bill. To be more accurate, $2,038,000,000, to be more exacting, according to Jerry Coleman. Understandably, it's the largest education funding bill in the history of North Dakota, but hopefully we believe it's designed to focus money in areas that benefit student performance. The bill contains a package of just over $400 million of new money which includes approximately, and you have to, you know, remember approximately, there's so many moving parts to some of these bills, $280 million in increased funding that follows the students, plus $125 million for low-interest construction loans. That would total again over $400 million with the package. The cost to continue is approximately $200 million, largely due to the additional payments we are providing for increased enrollment across the state. The proposed increases to our at-risk factor for students from low-income families would result in an estimated $45 million in additional funds to the biennium. An increase in rates for ELL would increase the package by about $770,000, plus $2.5 million for those districts impacted by a high number of the most costly level one and level two students, allowing for extreme circumstances. We are also proposing an increase for the REAs of a weighting factor that would result in additional $425,000. As you remember in visiting in our conversation with Mr. Auden of Pikus and Associates, they use an evidence-based model to make the recommendation. Essentially, we are looking at a 3% increase for year one and a 3% increase to year two to the adjusted base. This is complicated, so I'll go very slow for me anyway. The rates were derived from the Pikus-Auden recommendation, which was 94.42 minus $236 for 8 days of professional development, because the current law had 10 days and they were retaining 2 days in the base funding. And that professional development, those funds are addressed elsewhere in the bill. So in essence, the new adjusted base becomes $9,206, and then we've applied a 3% to that the first year, and an additional 3% the second year of the biennium. So in essence, in year one, we go from the current level, which is 90.92, up to $9,482. Which is a $390 increase per child. And the second year, we up that to $97.66, which is a $284 increase the second year. Again, 3%. I would also note that the two-year average is $96.24, and that's what I've used sometimes when I reference, well, here's about how much a weighting factor will generate. Professional development, we've looked at it in a different way. The bill kept the money for 2 days currently required in the base funding, the per student base funding, and then added weighting factors for each additional day, being day three, day four, and day five. The additional weighting factors is for the actual number of professional days provided or delivered, and all professional development must be approved in advance by the Department of Public Instruction in order to receive payments. As you'll note in the bill, for day three, we provided a weighting factor of 0.01 for the third day. That would translate, that just that third day alone will cost the state approximately $22 million with full implementation. Day four, the weighting factor 0.005 for the professional development. And day four and five each would have 0.005. So that way they can make up some of that we took out of the base funding, and allows them the flexibility for those that have offered more than the mandated 2 days. Also in the bill, it moves the requirements from mandated 2 days of professional development from one in the first year of the biennium. There's still the 2 days. But in the second year of the biennium, we moved that up to 3 days required, and then we provide, again, that weighting factor associated with. That would give schools time to react, time to work that into their budgets, time to work with their the administrators, working with school boards, working with teachers to make sure that that happens in a progressive fashion. That one is a little tougher for Jerry to get an exact number on, so we kind of pick the high number if everyone would participate. We know not everyone would provide 5 days, but we're giving them that schools that flexibility. So There's a lot of moving parts with that. We don't know how many might provide 5 days, how many might provide 4 days and such, but we picked kind of the high number to make sure that we aren't shorting anyone as you move forward. And to be honest, both of those factors are very generous, and that will be something we will be talking about as we move forward, because I think we're actually closer probably to, and there were some changes that I had made and didn't get accounted for, but probably a 0.003 is probably more accurate, because the consultant said it's about $30 per child per day. So, and that would come to the weighting factor of approximately 0.003. The at-risk factor, which was a recommendation of the consultants to increase that, and so what we proposed in the bill is increasing the weighting factor from 0.025 up to 0.2, which is exactly the number, the weighting factor that the consultant recommended, and to phase it in the increase to ensure that the greatest risk of those resources where they're needed, that being kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, to start at that with those levels. Because part of what we would like to do is make sure that those who should perform the best with those additional resources had that ability to, and then we can evaluate if we wish to continue the program, continue the program, or to expand it. The at-risk factor addition for those four grades would result in additional $45 million for the biennium. We will continue the current rate for students grades 4 through 8 inclusive, so they would stay at the current rate. And then for the school administrators, students can get money for both at-risk and ELL in this. The next change that we made was to the English language learners, based in part upon some data that I received from the Department of Public Instruction. And the current rate for level 1 is 0.3. We've raised that by 33% to 0.4. And we raised level 2 from 0.2 up to 0.27, another 33% increase. Plus, we've provided an additional $2.5 million in grants for those districts impacted by a high number of the most costly level 1 and level 2 students in those extreme circumstances. And they would have to submit their proposal to the Department of Public Instruction and have that accepted before they would be eligible to receive any money. For the regional education associations, there's an increase in the weighting factor of 10%, going from 0.002 to 0.0022. The resulting addition would provide an additional $425,000 for the REAs. And again, that's a 10% increase. Now getting into some of the recommendations that came as a result, also came as a result largely from the regional meetings that were held. Power schools, we removed the weighting factor for power schools per recommendation, as those dollars were in theory sent to districts, but actually retained by the state for payment obligations relating to power school program. So it didn't really make sense to flow it in, flow it out. The funding level will need to be included in the Department of Public Instruction budget, and I've sent a formal letter to the Superintendent of Public Instruction letting her know that we likely won't have it in our bill, so she should make provisions for her bill as it's being introduced. Cross-border attendance is also a recommendation based upon regional meetings to remove that factor based on earlier conversations that we had. And migrant school migrant students, those were now moved into the summer school program, so those are combined. Alternative middle schools, as we talked about the meeting before last, we'll keep that middle school rate on a go-forward basis because that was just a short program that, but now we'll have it in the bill. Alternative high schools, we've adopted a provision that we think meets what was discussed with those meetings and recommendation from the consultant. They'd allow all high school students to be eligible for alternative high school weighting factor. Dr. Auden recommends that the alternative high school be applied to all high school students, not just those 16 and above, which is current law. So in essence, we've had two platforms. We've had middle school, which are done by grades, and then in high school, it's done by age, in essence. So this helps mesh those and build that bridge together so that they don't fall off between middle school and then moving into high school. So now if they are categorized as being a high school student, they would be eligible for alternative high school. It's only an estimated to cost about $250,000 because there's an estimate of 50 new students for this. And then moving into a big point, I would say, in the bill is towards the end, and I'll characterize this and I'll have Anita further explain it if I get this wrong, but there's a lot of language up front with the COLA and so on and so forth. That's essentially carryover language because some of those dollars are obligated, but they haven't been sent out or utilized, so that has to carry over into the next bill. You have to slide down a couple lines to get really to what I consider the meat of what the new proposal is. The new proposal is $125 million in SIF funds for low-interest loans based in part upon low property value in growing districts. They must have at least $1 million project to be eligible and have an enrollment increase in each of the most recent 3 years. And the minimum buy-down would be down to 1%. A standalone interest construction bill will be also introduced early in the session, likely in January, that the plan would be to fast-track that, so we'll have companion bills. This bill, which probably won't get done in January, and a fast-track bill, which would likely, at least the intent would be to take that up in January with the thinking that we could try to fast-track that so some people would know if they're getting help from the state, and then they can get those bids out and they can, you know, make some progress. I don't know what that bill will be in terms of dollar amounts, but, and I even hate to give you a hypothetical because then people start saying that's the number. But Senator Scheibel has been working on that for 6 months or so, and the number that's in this bill will kind of float up or down according to what, you know, may or may not pass in that bill. So as an example, again, for example only, you know, so say if we're looking at $250 million and we pass early in the session something for $150 million, but we think, well, so we got 150 up there, so this one may float down to 100 million or vice versa. We don't exactly know, but we'll kind of make those adjustments as we see fit as we move forward. And then I'll have Anita, when she gets to her point, explain. Essentially, she set up a separate fund so that this is easier to track as you move forward. And I know there'll be a lot of other discussion points that we've had. You know, should the maximums be changed? That will certainly be a discussion point as we move forward. But we were a little reticent this last time to do too much of that because we want to make sure that, you know, a lot of districts had access to the funds, and we didn't want to shut somebody out because somebody got a $50 million loan. But again, one thing that's different this time versus what you passed last time, well, two things. Where the money comes from, in essence. But secondly, that they must exhibit growth in each of the three most recent years because we think those are the circumstances under which brings us to the dance, in essence. As in terms of a background, I know if Dr. Kopis is still here or not, she had meetings that she's working on. But at my request, Dr. Amy Kopis with the NDCEL conducted a survey in August to get a handle on the projected construction projects that were needed in the next 2 years for the state. If you remember last session, Doug Johnson did a survey, and that was very helpful in our deliberations. So that survey resulted, again, it was August of this year when the survey was taken, $197.1 million in anticipated construction projects. Now we know there's others that still had some that were in the works. They were thinking about investigating whether they can do them or not, whether they should do them or not, do they need to or not, getting maybe approval from their school board, sometimes going to a vote of the people. So that number is malleable, but that gives you a good starting point. We got it pretty close last session. I mean, people have been doing a good job in terms of getting information to us. So, you know, as a rough number, you can say coming out of the chute, it looks like there's $200 million worth of proposed projects that are coming down the pipeline in the next couple of years. So, issues that will not be included in the bill today because we have a specific charge, as you know. We have to stay germane to the bill. Certainly when we get the bill in committees, it opens it pretty wide, as has happened in the past. But much of the, I'm guessing there may be a bill on this, but on this bill, we will not have anything on ending fund balances. We will not have anything on assessments and reporting requirements. Transportation is not part of our charge, and whether that will be a standalone bill or we'll put something in another bill. To editorialize, I heard a rumor yesterday that we were going to cut transportation. I have yet to talk to any legislator who said we're going to cut transportation, so I'm not sure where some of this stuff comes from. I can't envision a scenario where we're going to cut transportation, but that's one person's opinion. But so you can probably quash that rumor with some of your colleagues, talking to our friends in the audience. Those numbers tend to go up, and I would guess if it goes anywhere, it will go up. We're not talking about instructional days, rapid declining enrollment, and rule of imputation, teacher shortages. All these things are things that will likely come up during the session or be bills, standalone bills. TFFR, on how to manage the gap that exists, that's actually being handled by another committee. Early childhood education, I'm guessing we'll see maybe at least one bill on that. And failure of districts to report in a timely fashion, if at all, and institutional taxes. So those are some of the things that really aren't part of what we were defined and required to study this interim. So with that, I would ask Anita Thomas from Legislative Council to walk you through. Representative Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you did an excellent job as far as explaining the bill. It is complicated. We are looking, as you know, over $2 billion in this bill. But everybody's well aware of Measure 5. Measure 5 should pass next month. Quite frankly, all bets are off when it comes to this bill. This bill is a great starting point where we're at right now. We can build off of it as going forward. But if Measure 5 should pass, we're going to have to think long and hard about how we're funding certain portions of this bill. So I just want to make everybody very acutely aware of that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, if you take a third of the budget goes to education, that's $100 million.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Anita Thomas, an attorney with the Legislative Council. And despite the long list of things that are not in the bill, we still have 51 pages, and I sincerely apologize for taking up your internet space and phone space and everything else.
Ms. Thomas, before you start, I probably should also mention, did you get that live on the internet, though, the bill and the summary sheets are available?
Mr. Chairman, it is. The last time I checked, the summary was on, and at 8:30, the computers were supposed to include the bill, so it should be on our webpage. And if anybody has trouble with that or they want a paper copy, let me know, and we'll make sure we get it to you. Okay, members of the committee, as Chairman Flackel said, much of this bill, many of the 51 pages, are all surrounded with a very simple little concept that was put on in the waning hours of the 2013 session, and that was to sunset various provisions of the education funding bill. People weren't sure that they wanted this to continue. By adding the sunset, in effect, the proposal from 2013 would just have gone away as of this June. Clearly, that's not going to happen, so we had to go, and that's why you got a lot of overstrike and underscore in the new bill. As you can see from the people have been calling them the yellow cliff notes, there aren't very many sections of this bill that are actually dealing with K-12 funding. And we will point them out to you. You can asterisk in the margins, and then at least you'll know where you had to be on the big bill. So if you take the bill, starting on the bottom of page 2, you will see on that page we took out much of the time-sensitive information that's outdated. And we did a little bit of reconfiguring. Current law right now says that the school district has to provide at least 182 days made up of instructional days and various others. We just took out that reference to 182. It's one more math equation that we don't have to do. But we left the requirements in. You will see on the top of page 3, we still have 175 days of instruction. We still have 3 days of holidays. We limited school districts to 2 days for parent-teacher conferences or compensatory time for that. And as Chairman Flackle said, for this year, for 2015-16, it's still 2 days of professional development, but beginning in 2016-17, there's a requirement that school districts offer 3 days of professional development. Okay, the next part of the bill that we're going to be dealing with begins on page 9, and these are the weighting factors. You'll see on page 26, we overstruck the 1.0 factor for migrant summer. Take that down to the very last line on that page. Migrant summer programs are included now in the traditional summer education program at the factor of 0.60. Okay, on the top of page 10, you'll see that home-based instruction is overstricken, the monitoring students who are involved in home-based. Currently, we offer that at 0.20, and that is still remaining in that, too, as the last two lines of page 10. Again, we have to have these factors in numerical order, so sometimes they do get moved around a little. Go back up to the top to line 3. This is the increase in ELL level 1. These are the least proficient students, and these went from 0.3 to 0.4. Beginning on line 8, level 2 went from 0.2 to 0.27. Beginning on line 14, we are talking about alternative high schools, and that's what Chairman Flackle mentioned, that rather than referencing age 16, we are now including the factor of 0.20 for students in grades 9 through 12. So there shouldn't be anybody falling through the cracks there. On line 16, we repealed the weighting factor for cross-border attendance. And then on line 24, we have the new at-risk factor for K-3. That's 0.20. And to get there, we take the percentage of at-risk students who are in grades 3 through 8 and apply that percentage to the students who are in K-3. On page 11, line 3, you will see that we maintain the 0.15 factor for alternative education, alternative middle school education. Moving down that page to line 23, we have the 0.025 factor for at-risk, and that applies to students in grades 4 through 12. All right. The bottom of that page, lines 28, 29, 30, we have removed the power school factor, and the funding for that will then allegedly go to the DPI budget. The next change comes on page 12, line 5. If the school offers a third day of professional development, the school is eligible for a factor of 0.01. On line 7, if the school offers a fourth day of professional development, the school is eligible for an additional factor of 0.005. And on line 9, the same thing, 0.005, if the school district offers the fifth day of professional development. Right below that on line 11, you'll see the increase in the REA factor. Currently, we are at 0.002. And that has been increased to 0.0022. And don't be confused about the 004 there. We're using 2015, 17. If you remember, we had three different categories of weighting factors. So trust me that the 1315 was a .002. It's a drafting thing and it's not worth explaining. Okay, the latter part of page 12. We have some additional criteria in order for schools to actually get the weighting factors. And the first one has to do with middle school alternative education and at-risk. Schools can get the factor applied to a student who is one or the other, but not both. So you can get the middle school alternative ed factor, or you can get an at-risk factor, not both. In moving down to line 22, schools can get the factor applied to all ELL students who are at risk. That's both, okay? And the final one, line 26, has to do with professional development. Dollars for that third, fourth, and fifth day are contingent on the activities being approved by the DPI. And we're envisioning that this approval will be done through the rulemaking process, and the statute states that the rules are going to have to address the content of the activities and the qualifications of presenters, and presumably some other things will be added as well. And I will just add for the record, Mr. Chairman, on lines 21, 25, and 27, we are going to reconcile the references to the subdivisions. Those are inaccurate in the bill right now. Next change comes on page 20. Beginning line 23, this is where you will find the dollar figures. $9,482 for the 2015-16 year. That's $390 over the current. We have a floor of 106% of the district's baseline funding, or 106% of the district's baseline funding per weighted student unit, or 100% of the district's baseline funding. If you remember right now, we're at 104%, so that's going to 106. The ceiling, we are at 120%, and this is the top of page 21. The ceiling has been moved to 130% for this first year of the biennium. Beginning line 5 on page 21. 2016-17, the dollar amount is $9,766. The floor is raised to 108% of the baseline funding per weighted student unit, or 100% of the district's baseline funding. The cap is 140%. Beginning on page 24, we enter the school construction section. What we found out is that since the late 70s, money has been taken out of the Coal Development Trust Fund and used for school construction. And apparently, the accountants have finally decided that it would be very helpful if they had a more formalized way of accounting for those dollars. So they asked us to create a school construction fund. And that got to be really interesting to try and figure out how to capture dollars that have been floating around for 30 years plus. And try to put them into a fund, but we believe we've got the language to do it. So, the School Construction Loan Fund, which is a newly created revolving fund, includes the $50 million from the Coal Development Trust Fund that's been loaned out since 1979. It includes the $150 million from the SIF Fund that you put into school construction last session. And we're on page 25. It will include $125 million new dollars that are proposed in this bill, and that is also contingent upon the schools demonstrating an increase in their average daily membership during each of the preceding 3 years. And then we also have lines 9 and 10, any additional dollars that are put in would go to the school construction fund, so the accountants are happy and they can keep track of the dollars. As a Senator Flackel said, the construction project has to have a cost of at least $1 million and an expected utilization of 30 years. And then we're going to go forward 20-some pages, so if you'll turn to page 50, 50. beginning in the middle of the page, line 17, that's where we have the English Language Learner Grants. These will be $2.5 million. Right now, they're set up to accommodate the 6 school districts that serve the largest number of Level 1 and Level 2 ELL students. The idea would be that the school districts would be eligible for a pro rata share based on the total number of Level 1 and Level 2 students. And the districts are authorized to expend the monies, but only for specific purposes, those being enhancing services to the ELL Level 1, Level 2 students, hiring of additional teachers, interpreters, social workers, and the provision of ancillary services that are approved by the Superintendent of Public Instruction. DPI is told that half the money can get awarded during the first year, have the biennium, the other half in the second year. Section 24 on that final page is a transfer. This is the section that allows us to take $125 million from the SIF fund and put it in the newly created school construction fund. And section 25, if all other monies available for school construction have been used up, there is another $100 million that's authorized to be moved from the SIF fund to the school construction fund, as long as the Superintendent of Public Instruction certifies that all other dollars have been used up, and as long as the budget section gives its consent to that move. Mr. Chairman, that would be the summary of the bill.
Does anybody have any technical questions? Because we'll go to that in terms of clarity, technicality for Anita before we go to opening up for guests. Representative Kelsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Anita, I don't know who can answer this, but I was just wondering, why did they eliminate the cross-border payments? What was the reason for that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelsch, that was one of the things that the superintendents had visited about when Alan Auden was here and had the small group sessions. And I'm sure Jerry can give you some additional numbers.
The estimated cost for that is $230,000. And I think part of it was that they had gone up in terms of payments the last time enough that they felt it was covered, the costs were covered as they had that cross-border. Any other questions for Anita? Run while you can. Okay, now we'll go to the public hearing portion of the bill, and again, just reminding people that, you know, stay focused on those areas that are we're taking up in the bill. So I'll take chairman's prerogative and ask our the superintendent who visited with me beforehand from Dunseith to come to the podium if he's still wishing to. He has some handouts, so if you can help him with that.
Good morning, Chairman Flacco and members of the committee. My name is Pat Brendan. I am the superintendent at Dunseith Public School. I've been there for 26 years now in a variety of capacities, from teachers to principal to superintendent. And I'm here today to talk to you just a little bit about what we considered in our district an inequity in the past year's funding that had a big impact on our district. And hopefully you will consider some potential changes in this upcoming session that would address this issue. The handout that you're getting will provide you with some of the information I'm going to talk about. And you'll see there that my district is on the top of that line, that chart. And there's another school district. I have blacked out the name because I in no way want to say that we don't feel that district is funded fairly. That district is used strictly as a comparative analysis for what I want to talk to you about. And the reason I use that district is our weighted student units are very similar. If you look at the handout, you'll see the very top page is just an Excel spreadsheet, and there's a number of attachments to this. The first three attachments are equity reports that are provided to all school districts in the state by the Department of Public Instruction. And again, that's just for reference to show you that the numbers on my chart are actually from the DPI spreadsheets. They're not numbers I've just picked from thin air. Number four and five, or attachments four and five, are copies of our impact aid reports, one from last year and the current one that we just received from this year. So those are reference information.
Let's hang on. I want to make sure everybody's up to, like, attachment four. It's typed in the corner here. I think some are scrambling to get to their page, so...
Bottom right corner of the...
We can give them a little space to catch up here. Okay, please continue.
If you look at the spreadsheet on the very first page of this handout, you'll see I start with school year 2012-13. That's the year prior to the last funding bill. And if you look at the weighted student units, we're slightly below the school that I'm comparing to. The total formula amount is very similar. And as you go across to the yellow on the right-hand side, you'll see the total state aid was very similar between our two schools. Okay, now if you look at the 12-13 school year, which would be line two on the top, which is shaded in blue, again, our weighted student units are only different from two. The amount of state formula is within about $20,000 of each other. But when you go over to the blue on the total state aid provided to the districts, we are over $1 million less than another district in what we received. And that goes back to this transition maximum, which is the first column with the red numbers in it. To the best of my knowledge and what we've been able to come up with is this transition maximum refers to House Bill 1013, Section 34, where it says all revenue received by the school district from payment in lieu of taxes. Impact aid is money received in lieu of taxes. But in our eyes, that is our state tax revenue because we have a large number of acres of trust land that we can't draw our tax revenue from. So the federal government's obligation is to reimburse us through federal impact aid money. Well, if you look at the transition maximum deduction of $1.9 million, and then you look at attachment four, which is the first impact aid report, we only received $1.6 million. So our deduction was just short of $300,000 more than what we actually received. And to me, those are dollars that we can't afford to lose. Again, if you reference year 14-15, it's the same. A $1.8 million deduction for the transition maximum. Again, we're $1.1 million less than the comparative school. Attachment 5 will show you the report that we just received last week. And this is a 50% lot payment. And so far, we have received $985,000. We're on track to receive about 70%. Again, that $1.8 million transition maximum deduction is about $432,000 less than we're actually going to get from the federal government. So I feel we're being penalized or deducted more money than we're actually receiving. Again, these numbers are here just for reference to show you exactly where they come from. The other thing is the very last column, the state and local funding per weighted student unit. Last year, our last biennium, we all heard, you know, we're going to get 88.10 per child. Well, if you look at the actual amount we received $5,982, where the other school received $88.10. And again, this year, $9,092 to the other school, $6,525 to our school.
Are you saying, though, that the numbers you listed that were lower are what you got from the state? Or total per child? Because the $88.10 is total per child, state and local.
Chairman Flacco, the last amount is the state and local amount.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, that number's right off of those attachments 1, 2, and 3 equity reports. You know, when we look at this in our district, to give you some background, 2 years ago we had to RIF a number of positions just to balance our budget. We eliminated an administrator, a full-time teacher, we reduced the teacher to half-time. That teacher ended up leaving because he couldn't afford to work at a half-time contract. We riffed a office worker, and we riffed a bus driver and consolidated the bus route. You know, we've been okay. We've been able to make it this last biennium, I think we ended up with about $113,000 left last year. We're projecting this year about $190,000. But, you know, it's good. We're on the right side of the curve, but we're coming into negotiations here. So last negotiation period was a minimal raise for our teachers, paying 100% of teacher retirement, a full single insurance policy. That negotiations cost us about $450,000. It's going to be really tough to balance our books and give our teachers what they deserve if we don't have some type of additional assistance someplace. Where that's going to come from, I'm not sure. I guess what I would ask or what I would like to see you consider is to making an exemption for the impact aid funds that schools like mine receive. Because in our eyes, it almost seems like we're getting penalized for having trust land within our district boundaries. And I don't feel that's a fair assumption to make if that's what is being done. I guess that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I kind of at the end of my testimony. If there is questions, I would be willing to take those, and I will do the best that I can to answer those.
Representative Munson, followed by Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your mind, had you not been assessed the maximum transition amount, but the actual amount, that little change would have made you a lot more whole?
We'd have been a lot happier, Senator Flacco and Representative Munson, we'd have been a lot happier with that. That would have been about another $300,000 we would have had to work with. When you look at a lot of other revenues, you see they get a 75% deduction, or, you know, there's a number of them that aren't fully deducted. I don't feel that 75% deduction would be fair either, but it would be better than what we're getting now.
But maintaining it. So did your money from the impact aid come in at a lower amount than was anticipated because of federal?
Excuse me, Senator Flacco and Representative Munson, the amount they told us to budget was 60%. We actually came in higher than that. But with that increase from the federal government, we were still about $270,000 below the deduction.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to understand what's happening here, and I'm not smart enough to figure it all out, I guess. A similar situation might be where a state game and fish department management area was in the district, and then that money would be deducted as well. Instead of calling it taxes, we call it in lieu of taxes, and then we take it off. Is that how it works?
Yes, Senator Flacco and Senator Anderson. In my understanding of the bill, and the bill is very brief, it's actually on that last page, it's one sentence. It doesn't clarify what those deductions, it just says revenues in lieu of taxes. In my district, we do have a small wildlife refuge. It's very small, I can't imagine it would amount to much. The only other revenue source we have is impact aid. That would be the deduction. And like I said, it is a revenue in lieu of taxes. It is what the law says it is. We're not trying to make it something it isn't. We just don't feel it should be the deduction that it is. It feels like a penalty. And one other thing I would like to point out, if you look at that first page, there are 40 other schools besides mine that have the same type of deduction. And of the 41, 12 of those are federally impacted schools. So I don't know what the other schools' deductions are. I guess I was more concerned with my district and finding one comparative to mine in size.
Any other questions? Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I might actually direct this question to Anita as it pertains to this testimony, but when I look at the page that he presented us in the 13 and 14 school years, well, 13, 14, and 14, 15 school years, where he looks at the transition maximum, even under the current law, weren't we doing 130%? Is what the cap is from the previous year? Is that, and it might change to 140, but currently it was 130, right? How does that number stay at one, you know, go from only 1.9 million to 1.8 million? How does it stay so high if we're allowing 130% to gobble that down?
We had Jerry queued up. We'll be coming up here.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So when would you get on the formula, do you anticipate?
Excuse me?
When would you get on the formula?
For the upcoming school year?
Well, when will the caps no longer be relevant to your situation?
I honestly don't know that.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Jerry, you want to...
Senator Flacco and the committee.
We interrupt, and then probably two things, if you can, if you want to say anything on the in lieu of, and then to Representative Koppelman's question.
Mr. Chairman.
Does he need to restate his question, or were you engaged?
Maybe I can go through the, to how this formula works and addresses this with the minimums and the maximums, and that should clear up some of this, you know, and how these baselines are established. But so you start with the baseline funding rate that each school district got and what that was based on. That in the last year, the for the revenue sources that were considered in the formula, so that would be the state formula, the mill levy reduction grant program, which went away, and then the general fund levies for school districts, and then whatever percentage of these in lieu of revenue sources that are included in the formula went in and were divided by their weighted student units and got a rate. So that was the effective rate that they were getting in that last year. That establishes that baseline, and then those percentage adjustments are made to that. And just generally here, the maximum then that any school district can get in terms of a funding rate per student would be 10% more than that rate was in that baseline year, that baseline rate that was established. So in the first year they get 10%, and then it was increased another 10% the second year. Our recommendations going forward is doing that 10% and another 10%, because it's all based to that baseline. But they're 10% increases in the maximum rate, and so that's derived from what they were getting in the last year before the new formula went into place. The minimums are on the other end. Districts are guaranteed that minimum, and those are set at 2% each year too. So it goes 2, 4, 6, and 8. So I mean, that's the proposal as it lays out. Now, what there is discussion on what goes into that in lieu. There is no federal money at all going into that in lieu of revenue calculation. That in lieu of definition were the revenue sources that were identified for that mill levy reduction grant program, and there's a laundry list of them, but that's what goes into that, and that's all local revenue. The major ones would be tuition income that a school district gets from another school district sending their kids over, the oil and gas production taxes that a school district gets, a percentage of that, and then other things like telecommunication taxes, rural electric taxes, and a laundry list of those. But none of that is federal, and in fact, the federal impact aid has a prohibition that unless approved, you cannot include that in your equalization formulas for states. So at least the impact aid money is actually prohibited to be used in states' equalization formulas, you know, unless it meets certain criteria, and ours doesn't at this point. So for, as I would see, for those districts that are on the maximum, virtually all of those are districts that have very little tax base, and that in many cases is replaced by this federal impact aid, but it's not included in the formula or the way the minimums and maximums work in the formula.
That same topic?
Yes.
Okay, continue. So we'll excuse Jerry as soon as we've wrapped this up and let people testify, so.
Yep. Well, to that then, you received a copy of his sheet here?
Mr. Chairman, I took a quick look at it, yes.
Okay. So, assuming that, he's got 13, 14, which was the first year, buying him 14, 15, second. By the second year, we were at 120%, correct, from what you just told me? 110 the first year for a cap, 120 the second year?
Yes.
Okay, so at 120%, his maximum deduction, at a $6 million or between $6 and $6.5 million state money here, 10% increase or 20% increase would be well more than what he's showing here. So to me, either his numbers aren't quite correct for some reason, which I can't quickly evaluate, or I don't see how he's getting closer to the formula by those chunks. Am I wrong in how I'm looking at that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Koppelman, I can't do those percentage increases in my head here, but I mean they should be roughly his revenue. If his students didn't change, his rate went up 10% each year, and that because that's based on his baseline. So that baseline rate that generates the funding for them would have gone up 10% each year, and there is an offset in that formula for the maximum. But effectively, they receive less on a state and local funding per student rate because of that maximum. But that maximum limits them to a 10% increase on their funding rate each year. And what's not considered here in that rate, they'll like he's got $6,500 in the 2014-15 year from the combination of sources that are in the formula. They also get their federal impact aid money that isn't considered in here at all. So whatever, you know, that might be, often I've seen about $6,500 a student would be federal impact aid that many of the school districts get, if just for a rough number.
One more. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Coleman, on a very closely related topic to his discussion, when we do the calculation for deductions for those other type of payments you just talked about, you know, outlined, is there a reason why his payments, the actual deductions wouldn't match, you know, the actual payments? In other words, if we're deducting $100 and he receives 80, that doesn't seem right. Is there a reason why those wouldn't match? Because I think that's what he testified, is that he got deducted, obviously the 100 for an easy number, and then he only actually got $80 from another source to replace that deduction.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Koppelman might take a little longer way around this, but the formula itself funds to an adequate payment rate, and that comes from a combination of state and local sources. And so it considers local sources, and there's a certain criteria for establishing that. It's 60 mils on their local property valuation, and then this other in lieu of, so it's coming to school districts in lieu of that, and so it takes a certain percentage of that. 75% of it, of the oil and gas tax and the tuition, and then some of it is at 100%, but that's all considered the local part of funding them to that, say the 90-92 rate that we have. And so the state makes up the difference. No matter what that generates, they're assured on a per student basis that they're going to get at that level. Now theirs is a little bit different because there is a maximum put in there to limit their increases to 10% each year, and that 10% is over what they were getting in that 2012-13 baseline year where the change occurred. But it's not dealing with the federal piece, and it sounds like the federal impact aid went down significantly for that school district. But you can see, even on the schedule, you can see their state aid pieces went up each year, and that the state aid pieces weren't going back. It's probably the total package for the school district might have put them in a negative position, but that would have been due to that federal funding source, which is not addressed in this particular funding formula. What's there is this limitation on that increase, and that's tied to that baseline. So their baseline rate goes up 10%. It still is driven by students. If their students went down, that would also mean they'd be in a negative position, but their payment rate goes up 10% each year.
Representative Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry, as far as the 10% max, what would be the cost to eliminate that if we were to get limited to 10%? What's the cost of the state? And how would that work, Jay?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nathan, I think you could just remove any reference to a maximum in there. That's, I mean, how statutorily you would get rid of it. You know, what it does in my projections here is it's about, say, $15 million each year, so it'd be about $30 million that would be... would need to be replaced by state funding if in the formula to make that up. So it costs about $30 million.
Okay. And just so I know, so nobody out there gets all too nervous about it, what would it cost to eliminate the 2% minimum?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nathan, that is about $40 million each year, so that'd be about $80 million.
That affects a lot more districts, I take it?
Mr. Chairman, that would be roughly about 80 districts that are on that minimum.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. You'll be around, I know. So, anyone else wish to speak to the bill? Anyone else? Well, seeing none, unless there's an objection, let's break. What time is that clock say?
That's right, it's 10 o'clock.
10:01.
10:01.
Quarter after, we're fine, aren't we?
Yes.
10:15. We'll come back at 10:15. And the changes we're proposing would do. And that's more conversational and then one just a page of numbers. So we will have Anita from Legislative Council forward those to committee members so that you have them at the ready so you kind of know what the various things would cost. As an example, the ELL, you know, would cost $340,000 for level one, $430,000 for level two, those kind of things. You know, what is at risk is, you know, so on and so forth. So that way you kind of know not just the substance of the language in the bill that's being changed, but the financial impact that that will have on as we move forward, so you kind of know the composition of where the changes will be affected. So now we're into the 10:45 portion on committee discussion. Is Representative Russ took off? Okay. Committee, any discussion?
Let me hand up my amendments.
Any discussion? Some amendments that you could possibly look at.
Shocking.
Well, these I didn't know, think were necessarily the right time to put into the bill, and I would not have felt comfortable in doing that. It would affect the base funding, and you'll have to actually read them.
Just pass it.
So what the proposed amendments are, what they would do if adopted, and I'm just handing those out, but as I think towards November and the November elections, I would prefer probably to not have these adopted right now because I hate to put something on that would have to be stripped off again. The amendments before you would lower the property tax for political subdivisions for the schools by 5 mils the first year and an additional 5 mils the second year, resulting in approximately $70 million in property tax reduction. But had these drafted up with the intent that it would be something that these people can think about as you move forward, and also to know that there are consequences to elections. And you know, I don't want to put these on now because that would probably have to be the first thing that would come off if, or at least be considered if Measure 5 were to pass. So I'd rather not have something put on and then we'd be made out to be like we promised something and then we took it away. So any other discussion on the bill that you had before you? And it, go ahead, Anita. Well, yeah, she said, you know, this would be just, and sometimes we do in these committees like this, we do oral ones, but, and this is a modified real one, but it wouldn't necessarily fit perfectly with the bill. So there would have to be like a 51-page amendment, which we didn't want to have before you.
Just
Mr. Chairman, I was more concerned about somebody thinking it's a great idea and just throwing it into session. So don't do this. We need to put a few extra sections on it.
So, any other comments on the proposed bill that we have before us, Representative Mathey and then Representative Rust?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to be clear. So you're 5 and 5. So we're buying 10 mills down from 70 down to 60 at a cost right now of $70 million, correct?
That's my understanding.
All right. And we took those 10 mills off during the session that cost us $50 million, correct? Last session, so.
I believe that was relatively close, 50 or a little more possibly.
Okay.
And then I believe Representative Rust had a comment about the school loan program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things I see about the school loan program is, and this is personal thought for me, is when I think about things that communities need, I think of two of the most essential things are schools and critical access hospitals, to be honest with you. And I'm going to narrow this one down to schools. When I think about this loan program that we have in providing low-interest loans to schools that vary around 1% or a little higher because of the percentage points, you know, that does end up to be some true property tax relief. Because when you have a construction project of $10 million and you get a, say, a 1% loan on it, thereabouts, you save your taxpayers, you know, a couple, $2-3 million in interest over the life of that loan. And that is true property tax relief. Because otherwise those taxpayers would be paying that additional interest of 4 or 5% instead of 1%. So you know, it is a really good program for schools to be constructed and for taxpayers to get some relief in that process. I can't think of anything better that the state could do than if voters have approved a school construction project to be able to loan that money to them at about 1% or thereabouts. It's something that is, they're going to get every dollar back that they loan to that school. We know they're going to get every dollar back. The only thing they lose is a little bit, the state loses, is a little bit of interest. And yet the property tax owner gets relief because of that buy down, so to speak, in interest rate. My personal opinion is I'd like to see that $125 million go up dramatically. Thank you.
What is that, Mathey?
I have a name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't realize I asked a question. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the bill draft. I move the bill draft relating to K-12 funding be approved and recommended to legislative management.
Second by, moved by Mathey, second by Senator Heckman. Discussion. Oh, Senator Heckman.
Mr. Chairman, I guess there's, along with the school construction loan issue, I think that now is our opportunity to look at some schools that maybe do not have the increasing enrollment as in the requirements here, because we've got buildings that are getting very old out there, and it's difficult to heat them, it's difficult to cool them, and it's difficult to wire them for technology, and I think maybe we need to expand this school loan program a little bit more into schools that do not have this increasing enrollment for 3 years. And the rest of the bill we'll hash over during the session.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion? Any other discussions?
Ready to go, right?
Seeing none, this requires a recorded roll call vote. So I would ask Anita to take the tally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is to approve bill number 15.0291.0300. Senators Flackel.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Heckman.
Yes.
Carceray.
Yes.
Fruman.
Yes.
Shively.
Yes.
Representatives Mathey.
Yes.
Dash.
Yes.
Haight.
Yes.
Hattelstad.
Yes.
Kelsch.
Yes.
Koppelman.
Yes.
Meyer.
Yes.
Monson.
Yes.
Roar.
Yes.
West.
Yes.
Sanford.
Yes.
Wall.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passes.
Motion carries. Thank you. And just so you know, Representative Wall, it's not always this easy. We have a lot of people that have been in education and know the issues pretty well here and have a broad spectrum of smart people at the table, so that makes things go much quicker. So, you're right. Representative Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the chairman and staff of Legislative Council be requested to prepare a report in the bill draft recommended by the committee and to present the report in the recommended bill draft to legislative management.
The move by Representative Nathan, seconded by Representative Kelsch. Any discussion? All in favor, say...
Roll call vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators Flacco.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Beckerman.
Aye.
Marcellet.
Aye.
Ullman.
Aye.
Shibley.
Yes.
Representatives Nathan.
Yes.
Dosh.
Yes.
Haig.
Yes.
Paddlestad.
Yes.
Kelsch.
Yes.
Koppelman.
Yes.
Meyer.
Yes.
Monson.
Yes.
Roar.
Yes.
West.
Yes.
Sanford.
Yes.
Wall.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passes.
Motion carries. Representative Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee be adjourned. Sign you die.
Seconded by Representative Rust in his last official act. Before he, I will not editorialize.
I'll go there.
I won't go there. We're always nice. Is that recorded? Roll call vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries. And I want to thank each and every one of you for your willingness to serve on this committee. I think we've done a lot of good work here. Hopefully you've learned a lot from the consultants' work and the process. So my thanks to you, Representative Nathan. Do you have anything?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
Would you ask me about anything?
Steve? Anything else? It must not be an election year. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.